Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, Chair of the Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum. It is now my pleasure to introduce either Heather Stevens or Mayim Daher, the co-founders of Life at Home Longer, who will moderate today's program.
We are super excited. Thank you for joining us today. I will begin by introducing the panelists and then have them do some quick intros, and then we'll dive straight into the panel discussion. First, we have here Heather Stevens. Heather is a graduate of the MBA and MPH program at UC Berkeley, and she and I co-founded a company called Life at Home Longer, whose mission is to help seniors age independently within their own homes as they age in a healthy way with a high quality of living. Heather, prior to business school and founding Life at Home Longer, worked in consulting for about 6 years. We also had the pleasure of working together at Intel. We worked at Intel's healthcare unit last summer, where is actually where we met Mr. Ben Wilson, who we have after Heather. Ben is also a graduate of the MBA-MPH program at Berkeley. He is the director of Intel Health, and he's had about 17 years of healthcare experience in marketing, consulting, technology. And prior to Intel, he was also doing entrepreneurship, where he founded two companies, one healthcare consulting company and one health technology company. And then after Ben, we have Eric, Eric Mann. And Eric Mann is doing marketing and business development at Posit Science, which is a neuroscience company that produces software that helps you develop your brain, so brain fitness software. And prior to Posit Science, Eric held a variety of marketing and business development roles at various technology companies in the Bay Area and elsewhere. So with this, I will let Heather do an introduction, and then the other panelists, and then we'll get into our discussion.
Welcome, everybody. It's wonderful to see so many people excited and interested in this topic and being proactive like you are. As Mayim mentioned, we'll start with a very brief introduction. Then I'm going to go into an overview of senior-friendly technology. And this is not meant to be any sort of a deep dive or really a detailed explanation of any particular technology, but just to give you a sense of kind of the breadth of what's available. My comments will be posed to a mixed audience, which is what we have, a mixed audience, I think, of people who are interested for themselves and also as family caregivers. So we recognize that there's, you know, kind of that those two roles there in most of the discussions we have. Then we'll have some brief presentations by our panelists so you can see the work that they do and kind of highlight some of the technologies that are coming on the market. And then finally, we'll have a panel discussion, and we hope to kind of integrate some of the audience questions into that. So we'll see how that goes, and hopefully it can be somewhat interactive. I like to start with a little comic relief here. Hopefully we're here to dispel some of these myths. I know Eric will have a lot to say on this topic. But also there's so many technologies that are coming on the market now that are really designed with older adults and families in mind so that it isn't a question of having to learn all these new tricks to use technology. So we'll talk about that a little bit. So senior-friendly technology. First, just to get it out of the way, we understand that there are some barriers to technology use. A lot of people have had negative prior experiences with something that didn't really fit in with their lifestyle or needs. Obviously, cost can be a barrier, although costs are coming down every day for some of these technologies as they become more mass market type of devices. Also, there's issues with lack of awareness, which I'll talk about on my next slide. And poor design, finally, is an issue that has been more significant in the past, but now companies are really starting to address this market and design things not for the 20-something who's texting at 200, you know, keystrokes a minute, but for the rest of us who didn't grow up with Nintendo and things like that. So I like to show this data, which is from AARP, and it's very interesting because it really highlights the fact that seniors and older adults are very willing to use technology, much more willing than their children give them credit for or the rest of society seems to pretend. Most of the problem is really lying in awareness of technology. People have, we've seen this in our business, an intense drive to remain independent. And in fact, most people are more afraid of moving into a nursing home than they are death in the aggregate in the U.S. So this intense drive for independence does lead to somewhat of an openness to a variety of technologies. And really the gap is in awareness, which we're pleased that you're all here to improve your awareness of these technologies. I'd like to go through some common issues that technology can address one by one. Again, this is going to be a brief overview. So if you have any questions on specific technologies that you'd like to address to the panel, please do hold on to those. One of the problems that people talk about is I'm noticing more senior moments, or I'm noticing my mom has more senior moments. I want my parents and often myself to stay sharp. There's a variety of brain fitness technologies out on the market, from paper and pencil Sudoku and crosswords, video game consoles that can be located in senior facilities. And then Eric's going to talk about Posit Science, which is, in fact, the brain fitness technology that has, I think, the most data and scientific evidence behind it. So we've brought you kind of best in class there to talk today. Another problem, people worry about falls in the home. This is a very, very significant problem, and we've seen this in our own business as kind of a key fear that keeps people awake at night. There are, fortunately, a lot of different things that are coming on the market that have evolved beyond the help, I've fallen and I can't get up, huge, yucky-looking buttons that people have to wear all the time. There certainly are pendants still, but there's also devices like fall detectors that don't require somebody to push a button themselves. And then also senior-friendly cell phones, which you can see on the reverse of this cell phone we have pictured here, is a button that someone can hold down for 4 seconds, and it automatically calls their top 5 contacts. So that's an easy way not to have a subscription involved with any sort of life alert-type company, but still get that service. Also, the pendants themselves are evolving to look more like jewelry. Older adults are just as interested in looking good as everyone else. And I know if somebody told me that I had to wear some big, yucky plastic thing all the time in place of, you know, a necklace I might normally wear, I wouldn't be very amenable to that. And it does turn out that people don't wear these about 50% of the time, and part of it is the looks. Another problem, people want to keep their parents connected to their family, but increasingly communications are becoming more electronic in nature, and sometimes older family members can be kept out of the loop. There are solutions coming online that help with this problem. The one I really want to talk about is the one at the top here, Presto. And the reason I like Presto, we've seen it work a lot of times for people because it doesn't require people to adopt a computer. It doesn't really involve any sort of behavior change at all. There's no new tricks involved here. The family member just has to retrieve an email that's sent in printed form to this appliance that's about the size of a printer. So that has been something that has been very well received by the people who know about it, but not that many people know about it. So again, there's that awareness gap. I'm constantly worried about my mom, but I don't have time to check in on her. Another version of this scenario is, but I live across the country rather than across town, which is increasingly common as well, having a number of long-distance caregivers, of which I believe there's about 7 million in our country at any given time. A variety of solutions are coming out in the home monitoring market, which is kind of adjacent to what Ben will be talking about today, a little bit more on the health and wellness side. But these home monitors can be everything from glorified home security systems to check-in systems that look at how many times the refrigerator is opened every day, to sensors. Well, you know, you want to make sure they're eating, so that's really important. To sensors that go over the pillbox area so you can make sure that the pillbox area is being accessed 3 times a day or however many times a day. So really simple things like this can help monitor in a non-invasive way, you know, some of the activities of daily living to make sure that people are still in their normal routine and nothing has gone awry. Some of them even will look at how often people normally get up to go to the bathroom and alert you if they get up, you know, 7 times to go to the bathroom or 1 time when their normal range is 2 to 3. So it can be very, very customized. Lastly, my mom doesn't always remember to take her pills, which is obviously something that can happen when we get up into the 10-pill range that so many seniors are in these days. Once she even accidentally took them twice. There's a variety of electronic pill boxes that are now available and systems that are available by mobile phone for those of us that are mobile phone users. There's also systems that will call people to give reminders, will beep an alarm in their house, and you can set them up. You can see this pill box here under electronic pill box. You can set it up for 30 days, so it's really caregiver-friendly from that perspective. So there's a variety of different options out there. There's obviously lots of senior-friendly technology solutions that we would really love to cover today in depth, but we're hoping that you can guide the discussion a little bit, and we'll give you some more ideas with the talks from our panelists. But there's exercise solutions for home exercise, senior-friendly cell phones, which I briefly mentioned, and devices for hearing and vision impairment, which we haven't gone into, but is also a field that's really going through an efflorescence. So that's the end of my talk. Again, this is just meant to be an intro overview. And now we're going to bring up Eric Mann, who, again, is the VP of Business Development at Posit Science.
Thank you very much for that, for the introduction, and thank you all for being here today. I'm going to speak very briefly. We're going to have a chance to answer questions a little bit later. But I want to just start out. You know, Posit Science was founded by a belief system, and that belief system is that in 5 years or 10 years, we don't know exactly how long, everybody in this room and well beyond this room is going to understand that exercising your brain in very specific ways is just as important, if not more important, than cardiovascular exercise. You know, if you talk to people from back in the 70s, nobody really knew what cardiovascular meant or why they should engage in that kind of activity. And now people do, and they are doing it, and it is helping them. And it is our belief system, and the data strongly supports this, that not only will individuals, but governments and insurance companies and businesses will all be encouraging and supporting those activities because they want people working for them who are sharper and faster and quicker longer. Insurance companies will be lowering their costs because they're going to have people with healthier brains in their membership. And governments are also going to be driving the health and welfare of citizenry. So that's a founding principle of ours, and it's starting, as you can see, probably from the news coverage to be borne out today. So just very quickly on Posit, we were founded in 2003 by Mike Merznick and Jeff Zimmern. Mike is a professor at UCSF. He's also a National Academy of Sciences member, co-creator of the cochlear implant. He's got a long history of bringing technology out of the lab and into the hands of people who can actually use it. Early on, Mike is one of the first people to step out of the box and say that the brain is not something that is a machine that just wears out with age. The brain is something that is adapting throughout our life, like it or not. Every day, our brain is evolving, and it's really a function of whether we want it to move in a good direction or a bad direction. Just like our bodies, we can eat Doritos or we can eat healthy foods. We've raised venture capital to launch the company. Today, we're in market. We have hundreds of thousands of customers. We sell directly to consumers who purchase our program and programs. We have three programs in the market today. Who use our programs for their own benefits, both cognitive and functional, so staying sharper, thinking faster, remembering more, but also reducing crash risk by 50% in auto accidents. And we also sell to insurance companies who purchase the programs for their insured and then give them to their insured to lower their costs. We are, to Heather's point, we're the company with the data. We have 58 peer-reviewed published studies demonstrating different efficacies of our program. So it's a very rigorous, scientifically based company. We are focused exclusively on making people's lives better and quality of life, both from the product experience as well as from what the products do. If you have any other questions, you know, I'd encourage you to check out our website, positscience.com. Feel free to email me if you have any questions as well, and we'll have some time later. So with that, I think next up is Ben.
Hi, my name is Ben Wilson. I'm the Director of Healthcare Information Technology for Intel's Digital Health Group. If I can get my presentation up. I get to the. So, the first question that people often ask me when I give these talks is, "What is there we go. Thank you.
That's the audience participation already.
That's right.
The first thing that people ask me is, what is the largest computer chip manufacturer in the world doing in healthcare? And the reason that we're in healthcare is because we think that there's a big opportunity for us to leverage our strengths in terms of research and IT innovation and our ecosystem relationships in order to do that. You may not know, but Intel has actually pioneered an approach called ethnographic research in terms of technology innovation, where we actually have ethnographic researchers, sociologists, that go into the home and live with patients to understand what their challenges are and what issues they have, so they really can connect how technology can help to improve the lives of patients. And as we have to admit by looking at the panel here today, there are actually a lot of younger people that are actually developing technologies for a range of ages. And so we have to use this approach to really understand the issues and develop technologies that are appropriate. We also do the same thing in physician offices, in hospitals, and other healthcare environments, so we can understand the workflow and the issues there, so that how technologies can help doctors and nurses to better do their jobs. Clearly, we have a track record in technology, and we've developed a range of products and standards, including things like the USB that you all use. It's something that Intel has developed. And then we also have a range of relationships that we use in developing our product. Our product is just an ingredient in most of the computers that you use. So in order to get that product to market, we have to work closely with companies like Dell and Microsoft and Oracle and Google and Yahoo in order for our product to be valuable in the market. And so those sort of relationships are important when you're developing products in the healthcare environment as well. There's lots of stakeholders in the healthcare environment that need to be brought together towards one common goal. The sort of guiding principle that we use is illustrated in this graphic here. We call it shift left. And basically it means that people are happier and it costs less to treat them when they're at home, and people are a lot less happy and a lot less safe and a lot less healthy and costs more to treat them when they're in the hospital. And there's sort of these corresponding trade-offs as you go from the right side of this graph to the left side of the graph in terms of the different environments across the continuum of care. And so we've set out to develop technologies to help people to stay at home longer, to live more independently, to get out of the hospital sooner, to make sure that they can stay out of a nursing home longer and can live at home. And so that's sort of the framework that we brought to developing new products. The first product that we have developed in this space is called the Intel Health Guide. It's a remote patient monitoring device. It sits in the home. It helps patients to communicate with their clinicians, with their caregivers. It sends, collects vitals and sends it to a nurse so that she can monitor the patient's health on an ongoing basis. It has educational material. So if you answer some questions and say that you're tired, it has a video that will talk to you about how you deal with fatigue. We call that a teachable moment. And so I think the president's been talking about teachable moments as well, so that everyone knows that term. And so our vision is we've started with what we call a purpose-built device. It specifically sits in the home. It was built for seniors specifically that have a little technology experience. It has a touch screen. It's easy to use. But we realize that a vast majority of people of different ages will want to manage their health, and we need to move this to multiple platforms like a BlackBerry, an iPhone, a PC, a kiosk. And so, but the core technology that helps people to manage their health and has a set of underlying algorithms and protocols based on the information you give it, it comes back to you and provides you with certain care plans based on your specific situation. That's sort of a core principle that's used across all these different platforms through which we can manage patients. And so this platform is more focused on chronic disease management. We have another platform that we're building that's more focused on what we call independent living. So it doesn't mean that you necessarily have a disease or a condition, but you want to stay healthy and you want to use technology to interact with clinicians, to put together a wellness plan, to help you to put together a diet plan, to connect with your support network, and so we're developing technologies for that area as well. And so I'd be happy to answer questions as part of the panel. Thank you.
All right, excellent. So as we dive into the discussion, I think in terms of context setting, maybe I'll ask a couple of questions of the panelists on, you know, why is aging such a kind of, you know, topic that's come up front and center today? What sort of challenges does it present? What sort of opportunities does it present? And then we'll get into technologies and maybe how technology can be useful there. Maybe Heather, you could begin.
Sure. So obviously the demographics in our country are changing, and aging is an inevitable process, and there's more people getting reaching the age of 65 now than ever before, and that will increase over time. Obviously with people living longer as well, we're having to shift some of our paradigms, I think, around, you know, people retire and then they are retired for about 10 years and that's it. It's now the case that people are retiring and they have half their life ahead of them. So that's something that's very, very exciting. It's going to result in, I think, a lot of changes in the way that we view work, the way that we view old age in general. There's people, I was just at an Ironman competition with my fiance, and the oldest participant was 75 years old, and I can tell you he beat my fiance, who's 29. So there's something to change your perspective on aging. And as I mentioned, people do want to stay in their homes, and our society is not set up that way right now. The average American home is not amenable to the aging process, so modifications are needed, new technologies are needed, and new ways of thinking and organizing communities are needed. I think all this is very exciting, and companies are starting to see it as exciting as well, because most of the wealth in our country is concentrated in the baby boomer age group. Although you see products marketed to 20-somethings, that's not who has the wallet to buy them. So hopefully there will be more refocusing in the future.
Yeah, and to expand on what Heather just said, not only are people living longer, but people are having fewer children. So there's a tilt towards more people that are older, and fewer people that can pay into the system like Medicare to fund it. But people are still getting chronic diseases, in their 40s and 50s, even if they're living till their 80s or 90s. And we know that about 80% of healthcare costs from managing chronic disease. So we've got an incredible amount of costs that are coming into the system, and if we don't make major changes in our healthcare delivery system enabled by technology, we're in for a lot of trouble.
Well, I think these folks have already said what's important, but the only thing that I guess I would add that's maybe a nuance is, I think in addition to having this shift in the population, the people who are aging now are different than the people who have aged in the past, right? I mean, the boomers have changed every facet of society throughout their lives. And it's my expectation, I think Posit's position as well, that, people aging now have very, very different expectations about their life. And that includes their retirement and their old age. And they want to live life to the fullest. And that means getting more out of their body, getting more out of their brains in our case. And they're going to put different kinds of demands on the systems, and the systems are going to need to accommodate the lifestyle that those folks want to have. And so that's very much what we're struggling with right now, is how do we build a society that can support that kind of lifestyle for people who are going to live a lot longer?
What I've been hearing, you've all been alluding to people wanting to be able to get the most out of their lives, to be able to be independent. The next question I'd pose to you is, what are the most important elements in helping seniors remain independent as they age?
Am I starting? A lot of the people who are in sort of older adult work and research have come up with this way of looking at what constitutes independence called the activities of daily living, which you've probably heard about. Some of them involve dressing, feeding oneself, going to the bathroom. These obviously are things that we'd like to just say, oh, everybody can always do that to the end of their life. But those are really the key activities that make the difference between somebody being independent and somebody not being independent and having to have some level of care and support or institutionalization. It's it's our position at Life at Home Longer that everybody can continue to live at home for the for their entire lifetime with some planning and support from products, technologies, obviously sometimes as well people. But just to give you some examples, they're very, very, very simple things that you can do in your house to prevent falling. You've probably heard about removing rugs. Improving the lighting in the home is actually a huge, huge benefit to a lot of people and also improves your mood. No need to sit in a dark room. Also things like raised toilet seats. Very, very simple, but make something that actually can be the difference between staying at home and not being able to care for yourself that much easier just to have a raised toilet seat, which can be retrofitted onto an existing toilet seat. And I mention these things which seem sort of mundane, but they're not. They're actually pretty crucial to somebody remaining mobile and active and independent.
I think that one of the key factors in people having a longer life and a more quality of life is social connectedness. The more that you can stay connected with people and interact with people, have friendships, the longer you want to live and the better your life is. And the data shows that you live longer that way if you keep that up. And we believe that technology can be a key enabler of that, that things like when people have mobility problems, they can use video conferencing, they can use email, they can use tons of different technologies to interact with people and look at pictures of their grandchildren, whatever it takes. But that way, you can stay connected with people, feel alive, and that helps you to stay healthy.
Yes, please. And so that's my question. It's all good ideas, but...
Yes. So I'll repeat the question since you didn't get the microphone until after you said it. So she asked, at what age can you introduce technologies? And I don't think there's an easy answer to that question because everyone is very different. Clearly, people who have used technologies all their lives will adapt and adopt technologies much more easily. I would, you know, all of my children's grandparents use a computer and have broadband in their home, and so it really depends on the individuals, their education, different economic situations, but you do have to realize that not everyone will be able to use technology or want to use it, and so it's important to recognize that and that different technologies are good for different people. And to be able to assess that and respond to that.
Yeah, I guess I would, I'd add that, you know, so there's a fundamental concept here, at least from our perspective, which is every person has two things going for them in their life. One is their brain, and one is their physical health, their mind and their body. Those are the two assets that we are all using throughout our lives to make the most of our lives. And so what we want to do is we want to maximize our physical health and maximize our mental health, and then use, to your question, whatever assistive technologies are appropriate and suitable, you know, accessible and reasonable for an individual person. And so I think what Ben is saying here is absolutely correct, which is that, you know, after you've done everything you can to keep a brain sharp and after you've done everything you can to keep a body healthy and fit, then where can you put technologies that are comfortable for an individual? It's not an age question. It's a psychographic question. It's a specific indication question. It's very, very personalized at that point. Not to replace, not to teach helplessness, because, I mean, the last thing that we want is maladaptive compensatory behaviors, but what we really want is supportive behaviors, right? We want things that are going to help people lift themselves up throughout life.
Just really quickly add to that, I totally agree that it's not an age thing. It's all about the individual. And when we meet with people, we really try to get a sense of what they're willing to use, what technologies they have used in the past. And you know, you have to ask yourself, what's the goal of video conferencing? is the goal to actually see this person face-to-face or feel like you have some sort of connection with them even though you live far away? Could that be accomplished by sending them digital photos via the box like the Presto? Or could it just be accomplished over the phone if they could hear better and maybe they need an amplified telephone? Obviously, I don't know about the situation in your case, but as Ben mentioned, the goal is really maintaining that social web of connectedness and support system, and there's a variety of different technologies and ways to do that. So maybe video conferencing is just too far right now, but maybe there's something else that could really connect that person to their family and to their friends using some sort of specific technology.
Heather, to that point, can you speak about some technologies that enable social connectedness in that demographic that you've come across?
Sure. Well, again, I mentioned the amplified telephone, and it sounds like such a simple thing again, but a lot of the solutions that we've seen really, really enrich people's lives are very simple things. If people can't hear on the telephone, they don't talk on the telephone, and they might not even mention that to you, that they can't hear on the telephone or mention it to their close friends or family. So that can be a huge assistance. We've mentioned the Presto a few times, which is kind of an email box. It is one way. There's also email programs that will basically take over the whole computer, so there's no way to mess up. It's basically completely error. It makes the computer error-free, and nothing's going to pop up ever, and it allows the computer to work for two or three key functions, such as email, browsing the web, and I believe this program also does digital photo sending and reminders. So that's one example. It's called Big Screen Live. There's others sort of in that category as well, and they enlarge the text and type and brightness of the screen. So there's a lot of things that make the computer more easy to use, essentially. I don't know if there's anything else. But those are just a couple examples. I think we had a question here, too.
Yeah, we have a question at the back, yeah.
As part of volunteering, I teach basic computer skills to retired teachers. But I make my own programs, my class, my program for each person. They come to my house. But I see that many seniors cannot come to my house. So my question is, are you developing software to teach these basic skills to seniors? That's one question. The other is, is your software iMac friendly?
Intel is not developing software to help seniors to learn different programs. I believe that there are programs out there to help a range of people to learn different software programs, but probably there's an entrepreneurial opportunity there for someone to develop them specifically for seniors, or people that have limited experience with technology overall. So,
We also have had some interesting experiences, and I think it ties to both what Ben and Heather said earlier, because so a lot of people who do the Posit Science programs, either our Brain Fitness program or Insight program, do it to improve brain health. And they're designed to be very, very simple to use. We've had one woman was 102 years old, and she did one of our programs. But people come out of that experience feeling like they know how to use the computer, and they then want to go on and learn. Oh, well, my son is on email, so now I want to learn that. And so I suspect that, you know, to your question earlier, a lot of this has to do with a specific application, and when somebody is motivated to learn or to try something, whether it's because they want to improve their brain health or there's another application on a computer or some other piece of technology, that will get them going in a way that may open up doors for them down the road, that will increase their willingness to try other things and to seek out solutions. We are Mac friendly. All of our programs run both PC and Mac. In fact, we actually, Mac users are very, very, we have 30% of our users on both programs are Macintosh.
We have another question over there.
I think she was next.
She
got the mic.
I'm next.
Right. Okay. Squatter's rights.
And I think this might be a question for Intel. It's about medical communications. You had something up on your screen about how you can be in touch with your medical program. It reminded me of when I've asked a couple of different doctors, could I communicate with them by email? And the answer is, no, we don't have it in place legally yet. Do you have any comments about what this is and how we get beyond that?
I think that I believe that the legal structure is in place. I think most of the reticence on the part of physicians to communicate via email has to do with one being unsure of the level of privacy and security that's required, and so whether they have the right technology or not, and then also their concerns about not being compensated for interacting with patients over email. So if you're emailing with your physician and the physician spends lots of time responding to you, she doesn't get paid. If you come into the office, she gets paid. And so there But the good news is a lot of the healthcare reform initiatives in Washington are now providing more lump, they're going towards providing lump sum payments for taking care of patients and focusing on more of what they call a medical home, where a primary care physician is paid to keep a patient healthy and paid a certain amount of money to do that. And so if they can do that more efficiently by using email, then they have that discretion to do that. So I think the healthcare reform, as we're seeing it now, is headed in the right direction to help address that. And that, I think that will be key in allowing physicians to feel more comfortable about that.
We have a question at the back, and then we'll
continue. So I had two questions, and one actually ties into the healthcare reform. I was wondering if you know if there's aspects of the healthcare reform that are looking at compensating or reimbursing for some of these technologies, because it seems like at this point, I don't know of any of the technology that you can actually get paid for by your insurance. Right. So that was one question. And then the other was actually specifically for Posit Science. I work for an adult school, and we have a 50-plus program, and we looked into doing the Posit Science program, and we would love to do it, but we can't pay for it. And I'm wondering if there's any grants or any I can't think of the word right now, but programs where you offer the Posit Science program at some sort of discount or something like that.
Or sliding scale.
We should talk afterwards. We actually do have some programs for folks that can't afford it, because we do want to get it out into the world, particularly to folks who are working with populations that wouldn't otherwise have access.
Yeah, and so to answer your first question, many of the technologies that help clinicians to take care of patients remotely, almost all, are not reimbursed by Medicare and most private insurers today. There are some pockets of reimbursement, but most of the reimbursement for these types of technology are for telemedicine. That's when a clinician to clinician, they use video conferencing with a patient there to get a second opinion or get a specialty consult. But there's very little reimbursement for clinician-to-patient interaction remotely and using technology. I don't know if there's going to be, in the new health care reform, reimbursement for the technology itself, but it looks like there'll be reimbursement for the service of providing monitoring and providing clinical services remotely, and then also the lump sum payment that I referenced earlier. If you're paid a lump sum and then you can use technologies to be more efficient in delivering that care, then you're incentivized to adopt more technologies like that.
Yeah. That is, we actually do have, to Ben's point, we have physicians who offer our program and they pay for it through Medicare. And they do that by billing their time. And they pay for the program, give it to folks, and then they can bill the time. And my understanding is, because we work a fair amount with CMS, is that, you know, they do want to make the outcome the goal, which I think is what you're talking about with the lump sum payment. It's not, did you get a call, did you take an email, did you see a patient live? It's, did you help the patient be more healthy? And to the extent that you can drive down costs or you can help use this money to drive down the system's cost, they seem to be very keen on figuring out how to incent people and insurers and the government to get all of the people together to drive down costs so that we have better care.
I just wanted to mention one other really quick source of reimbursement. A lot of long-term care policies are now starting to pay for things that keep people in their homes because people weren't buying it when it was only for nursing homes because people said, why do I want to pay for something that I don't ever want to do? So now many long-term care policies are starting to pay for things in the home. So some of this less flashy technology, even things like amplified phones, rollators, assisted walkers, because Medicare, you probably see people who have walkers with the tennis balls. That's because that's all that Medicare will pay for. They don't pay for anything. They won't pay an extra $15, which in some cases is all it takes to get something with four wheels. So, yes, we are in a sorry state in terms of what Medicare will reimburse. I do think that's changing. Obama talks a lot about his grandmother living in her home till the end of his life and sees that as kind of a model. How much that'll trickle down into policy, I think we still need to wait and see.
So we have a question right here. I think she's been waiting a while.
I've got a question about security systems, and it really isn't very high tech. But I'm looking for something to keep someone from walking out a door. And I know there are things like on kitchen cupboards, little baby locks. I'm wondering if there's anything similar to that that you'd put on a, well, it's not a front door to the street, but an apartment door. Or I think I've heard of somewhere that's a little alarm or some little noise goes off. Can you address that at all?
Yeah, so there's a lot of products that are made for that specific situation that are marketed towards people who have Alzheimer's disease or dementia. Some of the products will actually have a lock that goes on the top of the door. So I don't know what your specific situation is, but that works very well for people with Alzheimer's and dementia. They'll fumble with a lock a little bit and then ultimately won't be able to get out. Don't see the fact that the lock is up at the top of the door. There's also systems that work that actually require the person to be wearing something that will let you know if they've opened the door. There's also systems that will let you know when the door's been opened via an alarm as well. So again, not knowing your specific situation, I would still suggest searching for products that are about, that are for Alzheimer's disease, Alzheimer's alarms and things of that nature, because those are the most well-developed for that type of situation where you want to avoid a door being opened. There's stores online that specialize in just products for Alzheimer's disease. I think if you go to the Alzheimer's Association website, it's alz.org, they have some links to some of those products. Some of these products are starting to show up on places like Amazon, which I think is very, very encouraging because they need to be more marketed and used and viewed as not narrow niche products. The number of people we're going to have in this country with Alzheimer's and dementia, again, just as an example, is going to skyrocket in the next couple of years. So I do expect more products to be on the market in that specific segment.
This is an unpaid plug for Kaiser because I really love my email your physician and being able to look at the charts to see if my vitamin D is better, all that kind of stuff. So I hope they're watching that. There's also an appreciation for that phrase, maladaptive compensatory behaviors. I'm gonna take that home. But my question is about what happens if something goes wrong with, like we're fairly tech for old people at my house, but if something goes wrong with my computer, I'm a freelancer. I don't have IT people to come fix it. So I'm a little concerned about getting more fancy stuff that's going to break, and then you have to sit there and listen to a menu for 20 minutes, and then you're institutionalized. And right. You know, fix that, will you? That's my question. How are you going to address the need for fixers when repairmen went out in the 40s?
Well, there actually is a big growing market for companies like Geek Squad that go out to homes and help people to install technology and provide sort of a subscription service where they come out and help you to fix problems, or and they have phone lines that you can call as well if you need help. The other part of technology becoming more fancy is that it's also becoming easier to use. That's a key part of a lot of the innovation. You know, you look at the iPhone. Yes. Exactly. So, but it does break, but part of the innovation is trying to make it a little bit more foolproof as well and make it so that it's more durable. But I appreciate your comment about Kaiser as well. I think when we were talking about the reimbursement issues, they have a great model because they're a fully integrated system. So when they invest in these technologies and reduce costs and improve quality of care, that benefits their organization. Whereas a lot of the rest of the system is more fragmented, and so when a United Healthcare works with an independent physician, and the independent physician makes an investment in technology, actually a lot of the benefit when they avoid services or extra tests go to the payer, and so there's no incentive for the physician to actually invest in that technology when most of the benefit goes to another organization. So the Kaiser model is really helps to that's helped them really to innovate in that area.
This question has been partially answered already, at least as far as Alzheimer's are concerned. But where are some of the other products available, like the Presto email printer and some of these monitors, and you've had half a dozen other things? Where else can you go shopping?
So there are several websites online now that are specifically geared towards this category of products. One of the ones that's kind of the Amazon of assistive technologies is called Active Forever. And they sell a variety, I think it's just activeforever.com. They sell a variety of technologies and also kind of durable medical equipment, even all the way up to things to help you to modify your shower so that it can be a walk-in shower or roll-in shower. So that's one site. There's also sites that really specialize just in Alzheimer's disease. One of the sites that specializes just in arthritis is called Right Stuff, like the Wright Brothers, W-R-I-G-H-T. And there are also specific sites that are just for hearing impairment solutions and vision impairment solutions. And I would encourage you just to look online because things are coming out all the time. And obviously there's some kind of risk with being an early adopter for any technology. But I do think that there's a lot of things that are on the market now that have a lot of evidence behind them. If you're seeing a physical therapist, I would ask for their recommendations. You can also, as part of services that are covered by Medicare, you can have a physical therapist come out to your house if you've had a fall or your parents had a fall or any sort of hip fracture or stroke, and they will evaluate the house and essentially make a checklist for you for things that they think need to be done, and that is compensated. What's not compensated is then executing on all of those recommendations that they've made, and they really leave it to you to go and find the products, buy the grab bar, find the handyman. So that can be quite frustrating, but you know, I would just say that there's more and more things coming on the market now. Presto actually was in Target for a brief period of time, and it's now sold at Walmart. So these products are starting to make it into the mass market. You've probably seen Jitterbug ads everywhere. So there are some consumer electronics geared towards older adults that are really starting to make their way into sort of consumer channels that we would normally find ourselves in.
Just to add to that, there's another company called Red Violin as well. Similar types of products, you could check that out. There's a blog called ageinplacetech.com, and they tend to cover broad and relevant innovative technologies, some of them already in the market, some of them coming up into the market. It's a blog, so they're pretty critical about these products and are rigorous about them, but if you're just looking for certain specific needs that you want to meet, that's a very good place to look and just stay tuned.
Can you repeat
that again, just the name? Yeah, it's ageinplacetech.com, I believe. You could Google it. I may have the URL a little bit off, but it's a technology blog specifically for assistive technologies.
And that blogger's name is Lori Orlov. So if you Google her, the last name is O-R-L-O-V. And if you just Google her, you'll find it's basically her wealth of knowledge far exceeds mine. So she'll know a lot of things.
Like for instance, one of the things we found in the work that we've done is hip fractures and falls are a big concern and a big risk factor for seniors and results in death many times. I think over 25% of seniors over age 65 who fall, die the year following, and so. There's a technology that I recently came across on that blog, and it's not yet commercial, but they're looking into how they can use an insole inside your shoes to measure your risk of falling. And so they look at basically your weight distribution across your foot and your heel and translating that into then estimating how likely you are to fall or not, so you can do things proactively to avoid it. So that there's a lot of information out there, and as to Heather's point, it's just going to continue to increase. So.
I have two questions. One, the first for Eric, on do you have or are you developing software that will help with rehabilitation of stroke patients?
Okay.
And the other one is I would like to know from Heather and Mayhem what it is that your company does. I mean, when somebody calls you, what is it that you go out and do?
I'll go first. So right now today, POSIT has three programs. One is called the Brain Fitness Program. The second is called Insight. And the third one is called Drive Sharp. And there are a bunch of peer-reviewed published studies demonstrating a wide variety of good outcomes from those programs. There are a lot of studies underway with clinical indications. So anything that your doctor has to talk to you about or your doctor would prescribe things for you is a clinical indication. Stroke, of course, is one of those. We have a number of folks who have used our product, who have had a stroke and have used our product as part of their rehabilitation. We make absolutely no claims about it. It probably will help some people, depending upon where their stroke was, and we at some point will be regulated by the FDA. Our first indication that we will go through the FDA process with is not stroke, however, mostly for that very reason, meaning depending upon where the stroke is, you need to train different parts of the brain, and you have to be very specific with that. But stroke rehab in general is a retraining of the brain, and so we'd encourage any kind of skill building possible, especially if you know the region of the brain that was injured.
Maham and I founded Life at Home Longer in January with the goal of helping people stay in their home as long as they want to stay there. We noticed a big gap, again, in awareness of the products that are on the market and families really looking for solutions and not having a place to go to find that information and really match the right solutions that are out there with the specific needs of their family member. So the core of our service is really two parts. One is a very thorough evaluation of the home where we speak with the caregivers and we also speak with the older adults or older adults and find out what their needs are, what their concerns are, what their problem areas in their home may be. And then we issue a report that's very detailed with a set of recommendations, specific products that we can then help them implement, which involves occasionally a handyman or also sometimes just a consultant to come in and set up the technology, train them on the technology. And the ongoing support is on a subscription basis. We have had quite a bit of success in the last 6 months, but are currently looking for funding. And as you know, the economy is not at its hottest right now. So we're unfortunately putting the company on hold for the time being until we can find some funding. It's disappointing because we still have so many people contacting us and asking for these services. We've been working with the Institute on Aging here in San Francisco that has a program and a fund. But unfortunately, there's just not a lot of funds available either to fund our business or to fund this type of activity for seniors who need it, even though it's such a great cost savings. So that's kind of the status of where we are right now. And we've hopefully been able to continue to educate people and share our experiences and some of our learnings about different products over time over this last 6 months. Thank you for asking.
My question is somewhat related to the very first question, which had to do with the timing for installing these devices. Now, some of these devices are larger ones. Like an example of it would be if you have outside stairs and you want to install the chairlift or elevator. Now, when you're not really needing it, you have to think about the future sometimes. And you want to install these things, but you also think of what is my neighbor going to say seeing me install that when I don't really need it. Now, I probably won't need it for a long time. So have you had experiences in the past when people who don't really need it have actually gotten into installing these?
That's a great question. We have, in fact, worked with a number of people who have conditions like Parkinson's or MS that really do need to plan ahead, and they know they need to plan ahead. Unfortunately, a lot of people, even in those situations, not just, you know, normal aging, don't plan ahead, which is kind of a bummer for them in the end, because it does limit your options if you need to make decisions very quickly after a fall or event such as that. In terms of stair lifts specifically, you know, those are fairly easy to install. They are expensive and they are not covered. But one of the things we have seen a lot of people do is move anything they need in their house that's crucial, like their bedroom, downstairs. So that's one way of planning ahead and doing remodeling if that's something that's in your budget around that. Stairs do pose a pretty big problem for people as they get older, depending on what their condition is, or what sort of, you know, physical limitations they have. In terms of what people will think, I think more and more, particularly with the baby boomers, people want to stay active and healthy, and they're going to do that themselves and respect that for other people and that choice to stay at home. And I think if anything, if I saw that, I would think, wow, this person's really committed to staying at home, which is what we all want, and they're actually doing something about it.
Also, the culture is changing, and we were noticing that, where now it's almost the cool or in thing to do to be able to retrofit your house and make it very livable for the next 30 years of your life. And we've gone into homes, you know, one of the folks that we helped, the gentleman had Parkinson's, and they redid the downstairs bathroom, and I mean, it looked beautiful, I cannot tell you. You know, it looked nothing like a skilled nursing home would look, or an independent living facility or an assisted living facility would look. It looked remarkable. And so I think that as that culture shift happens, you'll see less of that and you know, people being more amenable to these changes earlier. We're running out of time, unfortunately. This has been a super interesting panel. So, oh, we have 5 minutes? Okay, so I guess we can take maybe 2 more questions.
Well, one problem that older people often complain about is that all of their friends and acquaintances have died and they feel very lonely. Is there some sort of plan that could be assisted by technology that you have had in mind, that you've studied or that you know of, that would be helpful to people that are in that situation?
Well, I mean, I can just talk a little bit about our experience. So our programs are most often done in the home at your own computer. We do have adult education and residential communities who offer them in group settings. And we have just remarkable results in those places. People go and they have a wonderful experience because they have improved their brain and they feel sharper and all that. But they also have a camaraderie around having experienced it in a group environment. And so I think our encouragement would be do group things and engage in group activities, because it is true that you can't control the longevity of your friends. But what you can do is you can engage with other people in your own community in different ways. Adult education is one terrific way to do that, but there are other ways as well.
Yeah, I would say that the new social networking is allowing people to have more of a reach. So where it would have been that your friends that you would talk to locally, there might not be as many of them as you get older, but if your reach is further through things like Facebook and so forth, that you can create these networks that go beyond geography. And it's also a way, you know, to make new friends as well around specific issues. The work that we do around social connectedness, we're trying to develop technologies where people across the country, around the world, can watch a television program together, and they can hear each other talk, and they can watch the same program and eat popcorn together, you know, over the transom, and we think sort of examples like that can, you know, be very useful. They're very simple to do through sort of teleconferencing, really, but encouraging people to do that and making the technology affordable is important.
Great resources, very, very good resources.
They have everything for you right there, from the networking and making new friends to social programs and people who will come out and help you take care of your computer needs. I mean, it's really, make a phone call.
Heather and I work with Avenidas, which is a senior center down in Palo Alto, very closely, and they have a fantastic program, and they're very well integrated into their community. One gentleman we met, he's Indian, you know, in his mid to late 80s. He comes there almost every day, if not every other day, literally maybe about a 30-minute, you know, commute away or longer on a bus. And he comes there just to befriend other people, like-minded people, or people that you know, can share some of the things, life experiences that he's going through. I mean, he didn't even grow up in this country, but, you know, and just anecdotally we started talking to him. And so, I mean, just to point to you that, yeah, just locally you have a lot of resources. And then in terms of, you know, computer bugs or fixing various things, Avanidis actually has, I think, about four or five dedicated handymen. And they're not really handymen. They'll help you with anything technology-related kind of on duty. So there are a lot of these, you know, local pockets, especially in the area that we live in, where you can tap into these resources.
Yeah, my mother has Alzheimer's, and Avanidis has been a great resource for me as a caregiver to my mom. So not only for the elders themselves, but for the caregivers, these community centers are a great resource.
Back to the issue of mobility that you were talking about a moment ago and retrofitting. San Francisco is blessed with wonderful hills and beautiful Victorians. Neither of those are conducive to people staying at home as they age. That's one of the major reasons why people do enter long-term care facilities in San Francisco. So retrofitting is certainly really important, and of course it's really important for the city in planning for any new buildings that are being built or retrofitted for care. But one of the things I wanted to mention that you did not talk about was the iBot wheelchair, which is based on Segway technology. And this is something that was hugely expensive to begin with, but the price on that has been coming down, and that is being covered at least partially by some insurers. If you haven't seen that, I would suggest that you take a look at that on YouTube or elsewhere. It is remarkable. It's really nice to see live demonstrations of it. It's really useful for those homes that have stairs and aren't suitable for elevators or other retrofitting.
Thank you so much for that comment. I think you're right that there is obviously even additional mobility challenges here in San Francisco. In San Francisco, for those of you who don't know this, is actually the city with the highest percentage of people over 65 of any major urban environment in the U.S. So it's a very real issue. Two things that I want to mention about mobility, one that's specific to San Francisco and one that's not. There is a company that was founded by two of our fellow Haas grads 2 years ago, and it just won the American Association of Aging Award for Small Businesses, and it's here in San Francisco. It's called Silver Ride, and what they do is they have senior-specific transportation and outing services. So they come and pick you up at the door. They're always on time. They have people who are pretty well-educated and highly trained who do the actual driving so that they can provide some companionship. They will escort you to a doctor's office. They also have outings that they arrange to museums, to parks, so that people can go somewhere where they can walk around and also socialize. So that, I think, is a great resource that's here and local. Another thing that I wanted to mention that we haven't really talked about is the role of physical exercise as well. There are a number of programs. Every senior center in the city has a senior fitness program, and they sometimes call them fall prevention classes, things like that. That is something that people should start doing as soon as possible and have as part of their life if exercise is not a part of their life, because it not only has a great community aspect and can keep people from feeling lonely if they have somewhere to go, you know, twice a week or however often they're attending these classes, but it has real benefits in terms of keeping them mobile, keeping them independent, and the senior fitness industry itself has really grown in the last few years so that you can have someone work with you or teaching your class who really understands specifically how to work with older adults and what functional exercises. So you're not looking to build your biceps, right? You're looking to improve your function, and that's really the direction that older adult fitness has gone in.
Yeah, I would actually add just one thing to that. It is really important to do exercise throughout life, and it's so important, in fact, that most Medicare Advantage plans actually will fund part or all of gym memberships for people in their programs.
That's
so
great.
It's worth looking, if you have a program, it's worth looking into that, because many of them just pay for your gym.
And in fact, one of the advisors that we work with for our company named Christian Thompson, he works at USF, and he's designing, again, fitness programs directly, you know, targeted at the senior population, you know, as Heather pointed out, not for building biceps, but for you know, functional abilities. And he's been working with a lot of senior centers in San Francisco, the city, in partnering with them and in rolling out workshops. And so, again, that's another really good resource for you.
Our thanks for the panel for their comments here today. We had Mahim Deher and Heather Stevens, co-founders of Life at Home Longer, Eric Mann, Vice President of Marketing, Posit Science, and Ben Wilson, Director of Healthcare IT, Intel Digital Health Group. And now we thank our audience here as well as those listening to this recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.